Today on Mr. Media, I reach back in the vault to my phone interview with jazz pianist and NPR legend Marianne McPartland. This conversation was recorded on October 8, 1983. Stick around. When the news reached me today that legendary jazz pianist and longtime National Public Radio host Marianne McPartland has passed away, I was reminded of my time with one of the many great artists who tolerated a young music writer early in his career. On October 8, 1983, I interviewed Mrs. McPartland as a preview for an upcoming appearance she'd be making in Clearwater, Florida, with her husband, Jimmy McPartland, and her old friend and frequent onstage partner, George Shearing. It was one of many interviews I conducted that are like fingernails on a blackboard to me today, but that helped shape my approach to the job over the years. Mostly, however, it was an unrehearsed moment with a jazz great as she responds to problems with the phone connection. "Oh, shit," she says, and compares a great combo on a great night as being akin to great sex. Fortunately, the audio cassette containing this interview survived the years. I've sweetened the audio to the best of my ability, but if you're a fan of Marianne McPartland, I hope you can get past my simplistic questions and enjoy the lady herself.
I'd like to start by talking about the times that you've worked with George Shearing.
Well, good. I'm so glad that I'm relieved. I was afraid you were going to ask me how I got in the music business.
No, ma'am.
Thank God.
I've done music-related stories for quite some time. I've just, I don't have a great background in your particular field. I do cover music quite a bit for the Times. I just, you know, I don't have a lot of background in jazz piano.
I'm sure you probably know more than you're saying. But anyway, George and I, it's funny, we did not know one another in England, although I saw him work a couple of times. He used to play in a place called Hatchet. I mean, you probably don't want to even...
No, that's all right. It's H-A-T...
H-E-T-T-E-S.
Okay.
And that's going back a good many years. Anyway, I didn't meet him until we were both over here. And George was becoming very famous, and I was living in Chicago with Jimmy, and we went out to see him in Chicago at a club called The Silhouette, and that was when the group was really making it, you know. And I was just thrilled. That's really when I met George. It was like in the late 40s. And thereafter, we would see one another periodically, and he went with Capitol Records, and later I went with Capitol, so we do a lot of promotional things together. But we didn't start playing the kind of thing we're doing until just a few years ago. It's probably been about 6 or 7 years now that we've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather a long answer to your question.
No, that's fine. I'm learning quite a bit. What was the nature of the first performance you did together?
I forget the first one, but it was probably one of the similar to the thing we're doing at Clearwater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be a concert type thing where we would each play separately with our bass player, and then we would play together. I just can't seem to remember how this first started. I think it came out of we would always visit one another in nightclubs, and I would always ask George to play, and very often we would play four hands, and suddenly there got to be this interest in booking pianists together, and it seemed a logical thing for George and me. We play well together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he was one of the first guests on my National Public Radio show, which I think comes over your station there, WMFT?
WMNF?
See that, it's the closest.
Right, yeah, that's probably it. That's the public station in this
that's
area.
The public radio station. In fact, it should start today, the new series. No, I mean, tomorrow, Sunday, it should be was opening the new series with Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Well, he's a very fine pianist.
Come to think of it, I think the last time I saw him, he was doing a commercial where he was playing the piano.
A very fine piano.
And of course, he's played it in several movies, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he always manages, he says he always likes to get his licks in. I don't think that the person seeing the movie has any idea of how really good a player he is, both classically and as a jazz player.
Is that right? Now, this is bouncing around a little bit, but how did you come to be tied in with Dudley Moore?
Well, it was just because I was searching around for people for the radio show, and I don't know how much you know about this show, if you've ever heard any of them.
No, ma'am.
Well, that's too bad, because though I do say so myself, it is a good show, and maybe you'll get a chance to listen. It's, what it is me interviewing other pianists, and we both play and talk and play together and play separately.
That sounds very interesting.
I've had, as I say, I've done two shows. We were starting the new series, and so I thought, well, I'll just call Dudley because I knew him from years ago. And I know how he loves to play, and I thought, well, I know he's a big movie star and all that, and I'll bet he would love to play, which is just the way it turned out. Just was very happy to do the show, and turned out very nicely. So that's the story of that. So now we're back to being bosom buddies again.
Who else have you got coming up on the show for this season?
Dorothy Donegan, Monty Alexander, Albert Daly. I don't know if you know him.
No.
He's a fine player. Played with Duke. A lot of bands, a lot of different bands. He's a man about 45. Very excellent player. Let's see, who else did I have? Derek Smith. Joe Bushkin.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Has George Shearing appeared on the program?
George, yeah. Well, George was on one of the earlier ones. As I say, I think that he was on one that I did a couple of years ago. And I think that sort of generated the idea of doing a record together. Are you going to call George, or shall I include him in all in this interview?
No, that's all right. I'm expecting to speak to George Friday afternoon.
Because he's in Washington right now.
Right. I spoke with Edith Kiggins.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. This past Friday, and she said that George would be back in New York next Friday, or a week from yesterday, and I would give him a call then and speak to him.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing the radio program now?
About 4 years.
Wow. Let me ask you something else. I was just thinking about while you were talking, something that came to mind this afternoon while I was reading up and doing some listening to some of the records. There are not a hell of a lot of women in jazz music in general and jazz piano. It strikes me. Is that an incorrect?
Well, there are probably more than you realize. They're not all as visible as people like Mary Lou Williams was, Barbara Carroll, myself, Vi Red, saxophone player, Dottie Dodgers, drums. There really are a lot of women around, but they're not that well known to the general public, like even Dorothy Donegan. Hello?
I'm here. Yeah, what is that?
Hello?
Are you still there, Miss McFarland?
Hello?
Hello.
What the heck was that?
I don't know. I said, we must have just picked up E.T. or something.
Well, I was going to hang up, and then I thought, well, I'll wait. Maybe it'll go away. Listen, you could call the operator and tell us it refunds your money.
Well, let's see if we can get by, and if it comes back, I'll hang up and I'll call you back.
All right, let's see, where was I? Dorothy Donegan. Well, there's another one. I mean, there are a lot of them. There were more years ago, like when you think that, shit, in Is that a drag?
Yeah.
Why don't you...
I'll do that. I'll call the operator and call you back. All right.
I'll be right here.
Okay, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. McFarland.
Hello?
Mrs. McFarland?
You've got the wrong number. What number are you calling?
This 378.
It's you that I better let the service pick up.
Oh, that's right. You know, that was funny. I told the operator what happened. She said, well, just one moment. I will dial and make an adjustment. And I said, all right. So she dials, and she got the wrong number.
Oh, boy. Can't win these days.
That's funny.
Well, so let's see. Where was I? Well, women musicians. But anyway.
Right.
There are a lot. I know what I was going to say. Like, one of the definitive Louis Armstrong records had his wife Lil on piano.
Is that right?
The Louis Armstrong Hot 5. That's one of the best Louis Armstrong records ever.
Hmm.
And,
Do you think that the contribution of women to the industry and the sound in general is overlooked? And
yes,
there are not, as you pointed out, there are not that many women who've received the renown, and I suppose the acclaim that you have, and I suppose Miss Donegan has.
Well, it's funny because, like, Mary Lou, because she died a couple of years ago, and I always felt that she was the definitive, the epitome of a high caliber woman musician, that she could do everything. She could write. She had written for one of the greatest bands, like Andy Kirk, you know. She composed. She improved all the time. She didn't stick in a rut. She was... You know, I admired her so much, and yet with all, she still didn't, to me, get the acclaim through the general public that she should have had if she'd been more, not aggressive exactly, but had a press agent and been more commercial-minded than she was. You know, like Hazel Scott really got to be a big star by being more... driving and more commercial, but yet she couldn't play like Mary Lou. Mary Lou was a fantastic player.
Mm.
But it's a strange thing, I think, that probably because we are women, that so many things get in the way, like you fall in love, or you get married, or you marry the wrong guy, or you have kids, and then you marry the wrong guy again. You know, and then you marry the wrong guy for the third time. I'm not speaking about myself, but
no.
I've seen this happen where really, like, Fi Red is a good example of that. She get married and have kids, and then she went on the road with Earl Hines, but then she had to come home and look after the kids. So you can't really keep a career going. Whereas, you know, men, they just drop everything and they go. Nothing gets in the way of a man's career, I think. I think his work comes before anything.
I thought it was... It seemed interesting that men have received a great amount of credit over the years, especially in jazz, for their play of instruments accompanying women vocalists, as opposed to being the other way around, or even women accompanying women. That you don't find, or at least I didn't find in what limited research that I've done.
Interesting.
Does that seem to be on the right track to you? I don't know.
On the right track, and as I think of it, it's very peculiar, because I mean, we'll take Mel Tormé for instance.
Right.
I couldn't ever imagine him with a woman accompanist.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I once said to him, "Boy, would I love to be around and play for you," you know, and I have played for him at sessions, and I have played for Tony Bennett and stuff like that, but I could never see them wanting to have a woman accompanying them. And as far as women singers having other women, I haven't seen that either. I never thought of it before.
Yeah, well, we were listening to what did we listen to this afternoon? Some old Billie Holiday that Teddy Wilson
right.
had played on, and I was thinking about that, and of course George and Mel Tormé had had done, I guess, two albums now.
Right.
And the first one won the Grammy this year.
Right.
And I started thinking about that, and I wondered. And it just didn't make a heck of a lot of sense. I could see in it over the years men are very, I guess, are very short-sighted about women's talents and a lot of things. But it, with all the famous women vocalists, be it who's still singing today, Ella Fitzgerald, Lena Horne, how many of them are using women as accompanists?
Well, you know what? There's something funny about it. But like. It's an intangible thing. Like, I have done things with an all-girl group, and I don't know how to explain this, but I think the average singer, let's just say somebody like Ella. Now, I don't know why. It's insane when you think of it, but I think some form of prejudice might prevent her from having a woman accompanist. It's strictly a woman-type thing. You just don't want to have another woman around.
Mm.
It could be that. I don't know. Because, there are good women accompanists. But, of course, women musicians I know, they want to do something in their field. They don't want to be accompanists. They want to be leaders.
Right.
See, so that, there's also that.
I guess there's a heck of a lot of roadblocks.
Well, and I think there could also be, in a way, there's a sexual thing there because it could be. I don't know, but now, as I say, I have had some women work with me, not many.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get on the right track, and you've got a good bass player and a good drummer, and everybody's playing well together, I swear there's some kind of sexual thing is set up. In the music.
Right.
I'm talking about.
Right, I realize that.
You know, of course it could go to the other thing too. I'm concerned. I won't say it couldn't, but there's something about working, if you're a woman, having the opposite sex working with you. I don't know, probably what I'm saying is terribly chauvinistic.
No, I don't.
And I would be the first one to recommend, a woman drummer or bass player I know for a gig if I thought they would be right. But at the moment, I must say for myself, and I discussed with Joanne Brakeen, I don't know if you're familiar with her name. She's a jazz pianist. That there really are no girl drummers or bass players who quite come up to the men players. Now, maybe on other instruments, but bass and drums, no, that I can't recall anybody that is as outstanding as, say, Eddie Gomez.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I can't even think of a drummer. I haven't used one in so long. Well, the drummer I had, Joe Morello.
Okay.
Still fabulous.
Are you working primarily as yourself and a bassist now?
Well, on and off. I've been both. Like, this particular date I'm doing with George will be a bass player, but I do a lot of trio dates, and I do a lot of solo dates also.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of mix it up. I don't have the regular trio format that I used to have. Because I do so many different kind of things. I do stuff in colleges, like artist residence, and then I'll play a concert somewhere. It's all different.
Mm.
I suppose I could nail it down and say, well, I won't work unless it's a trio or like George. Now he works solely with a bass player, and that's all he does.
Right.
But it's kind of fun changing off and doing different things.
Has the if you don't mind my asking, how long have you been playing professionally? Because I do not know.
Well, I don't know. It's a hell of a long time. I suppose I did a few things in England. Nothing I was that proud of. I feel as if I really started to play a little better after I started over here working with Jimmy in the 40s.
Mm.
You know, which was. You know, you've been, if you insist on talking about age, I'd rather not.
No. That's not what I'm getting at all.
Oh.
What I was curious about is how the nature of the venues and the business of playing the jazz and the jazz piano in particular may have changed over the years. There isn't. You've gone from jazz has gone from a great height in the 40s and 50s, a great national height, to I would say now it's a very well respected form of music. It has a great history, and it. I'm making it sound like a dinosaur. I don't mean that at all. Certainly.
I can see the air freight guy at my door.
Sure.
Hold just 1 minute.
She had a galantine on the door.
The changes in the business over the years, in that what I was leading up to, it's starting to sound like I was making the music out to be of the stature of a dinosaur, and that wasn't my intent.
We are a bunch of dinosaurs, because we're all playing.
No, yeah. I wouldn't touch that line, ma'am, no.
When the ones that are straight that take care of themselves, and somebody... You know, I know I'm digressing, but I mean, there's so many musicians that should be alive, like Charlie Parker and all these guys. And it's too bad they just didn't take good care of themselves, like George and me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Well, that's along the lines of what I was getting at. What I was thinking was that now the jazz is such a... It has an extremely high respect among all areas of music today, ranging from the jazz itself, the people who are doing who are just coming out and doing jazz now, to people in rock music who to a one would probably tell you that they have great influences from the jazz field.
Well,
but there isn't as big a market for the jazz. It survives through programs like your own on NPR and on public television, in halls like the Clearwater thing that you've got coming up.
Yeah.
And I wondered, you know, if you might have a comment on how that's changed from, let's say, in the 40s and 50s.
Well, because I just feel that no matter what happens in jazz, it may be respected and admired by a segment of the public, I still think it will always be kind of a minority music, because it's just too complex, or it's not pushed down everybody's throat like rock music is. I mean, people have come to accept some of the most terrible music, and I'm not condemning all rock. I'm just condemning, like, some of this really mindless music that is on the charts, and the beat gets to drive me crazy. There's no variety. It's like tribal music. And I don't think the average person wants to bother to listen to jazz, which is so wonderful when you know something about it, or when you really take the trouble to listen.
And the reason being that it's, you know, it isn't plugged for the masses. And I'm actually, in a way, I'm glad, because I think if it, people tried to make a big commercial bonanza out of jazz, it would just all fall apart. I think that's the nature of the music, that it's for people who care enough and have the ability to absorb it. You know, it's not for your mindless person skipping down the wrong side of the street on a bicycle with his headset on, going against the traffic and going through red lights.
How do you feel about a lot of the jazz that's made it into the more popular, like a Herbie Mann or a Sergio Mendez or things that have,
yes.
Does that help?
I think to a certain extent they've can't say they've sold out, but they've decided to step over the line enough to make their music more palatable to the masses. I mean, I feel a little badly about Herbie Hancock, because that guy is such a sensational musician. He's so bright, such a good writer, and he just wanted to be acclaimed by millions, and I guess he is with the kind of stuff that he's writing, but I can't forget that he wrote Maiden Voyage and Dulcet Dance Jessica and all those beautiful tunes that we all play.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it has a useful purpose to the more serious jazz musicians that there are these people in a time where, as we say, there it may only be appealing the hardcore of the jazz may only be appealing to a small segment, but when Herbie Hancock or let's say Chuck Mangione has just really hits a chord with the public in general, and they get interested enough in that one pop thing that they go and they investigate further. Is that useful?
Oh, I would say so. But I'm just wondering how many of them do investigate further. I think some do. I know they do, because I've been at colleges, like doing a program at Artists in Residence or something, and kids will be there to take a piano lesson, and I'll say, well, what are you doing here? And the kids will say, well, I figured there must be something more to music than the four chords I've been playing with the band. You know, so then you say, well, come right in. Maybe there's something we can tell you that you don't know.
Right.
And I'm sure there are kids like that that do gravitate from rock to jazz, and do hear some of the things that maybe Chick Corea, you know, he's kind of veering over a little bit from the jazz thing, but there's a lot of kind of in-between music, some of which is very attractive. You know, it has elements of jazz, elements of rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's sort of something for everybody, really.
All right. Let's get back. Let's talk about Marion McPartland a little more. I think we've covered the jazz area as jazz goes. But I'd like to know more about you. Over the lengthy career that you've had, not putting any number of years on it.
All right.
What would you say some of the more personally pleasing highlights have been? What were the things that you've done professionally that pleased you tremendously that may not have been necessarily the most successful things?
Oh, God, you know, it's hard to say. There's so many peaks and valleys all the time. It just keeps going on, you know. I mean, it's hard to pick one. I guess thinking of, like, playing at the Nice Jazz Festival with Joe Minuti, maybe something like that. You know, and I go through old pictures and see myself and Duke Ellington in the Hickory House, and remember sitting in with his band the last year before he died. And I think probably one of the best things I can think of is Duke, is that somebody reminded me of this the other day, that I guess the last time he played in his hometown of Washington was doing a date with me with some school kids. That's probably one of the most gratifying things I ever did, was having the money at my disposal through a grant to bring him down there to play for kids that were involved in a program I was doing. To have him actually be there and play the music. I just thought, well, this is something that would be lovely to do that more often with more schools, more jazz musicians. And, you know, a lot of us are doing that, trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. There's just so many things.
That wasn't intended to be a particularly easy question. I was kind of curious if you sat down and were thinking back on, you know, your career, and you said, well, now that was something that I was really glad that I did, or something that I'm sorry I did.
Well, it's hard to think of one off the top of my head. I mean, basically, I can only, as I think back, it's so many good things, really, that it's, I mean, it seems that my career has just been on, you know, didn't shoot up or anything, but I mean, it's sort of on a slow, steady climb, and I feel as if it still is. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've added so many things that I used not to do, like playing with symphony orchestras, like doing the piano concerts with people like George, doing the radio show. That's something I get a tremendous boost out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe having Bill Evans on the radio show was one of the highlights of my life, now that I think of it. Playing the piano to Bill Evans, who has probably been one of my major influences in the early days of Teddy and Duke, people that I've always admired.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
On the show and having Oscar Peterson on the show. My God, you know, I've after all these years, I'm still a jazz newbie. I'm still very humble being able to do all this.
That almost seems like kind of like the nature of the field, is that each artist in jazz, more so than any other field, possibly, maybe opera being a little different in a case the vocalist concerned, are very in awe of one another, it seems. You know, you always have people always think that they're above everything else, but the more musicians I talk to that are in the jazz area, they always speak very highly of many, many people who, you know, they'd like to, they've met or they've played with, and it's just like, you know, it seems like it must have been quite an experience.
I think it's true. Like, let's take somebody like Teddy, you know, who's been around for a good many years, a little longer than George and myself, perhaps, but so even if you're not a fan of what Teddy's doing right now, like, I could say, well, I've listened to Teddy for so many years that if I had a choice between going to hear him and going to hear Keith Jarrett, I probably would go to hear Keith Jarrett, but that doesn't diminish my admiration and respect for Teddy,
mm-hmm.
for what he has done throughout the years. You know, and I think this is the way we all feel. Like, if Teddy came in to see me, I feel, my God, here's one of the greats of jazz in the room, and I would announce it to the people. And, you know, there is that thing. You are in awe, or you have admiration and respect for your fellow musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's a stylist. It's not like you're all a bunch of people doing the same thing, like maybe a football team. Everybody is so unique in the field. They each have their own style and their own special thing that they do, that they're known for. I think that's what sets them apart.
You and Teddy and George have played together only once before?
Oh, no. Time.
Is that right? I was Mr. Bremen at the Ruth Eckert Hall told me it was only once. That's why I asked.
Well, maybe
he's only been there once.
Maybe, but we've done that a lot. In fact, Teddy and I made an album years ago, which was a big kick for me.
What was the name of the album?
It's called Elegant Piano.
Elegant Piano?
Yes.
Hmm.
And it's on my own record label that I started in the 70s called Halcyon.
Could you spell that for me?
Halcyon. you know, like Halsey Days.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And, in fact, I probably will bring a few of those, peddle a few in concert.
What kind of things can we expect from the three of you when you get together on the stage?
Well, they probably won't be anything too new. I mean, they'll probably be tunes like Sweet Georgia Brown, All the Things You Are, something like Gershwin, maybe Exactly Like You, maybe Honeysuckle Rose. You know, sometimes I let Teddy pick one, George picks one. I usually go with whatever they want to play, although George and I get a bit competitive at times, trying to fool each other with something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ted is rather on the serious side, but George is a real cut-up.
This is kind of a difficult thing for me to even ask, but were there any difficulties when you first started working with George, dealing with his blindness? Anything you had to compensate for in dealing with?
No.
I wouldn't have thought so, but...
It's really funny. Like, he has ways of, like, from the piano, gesturing in such a way that if he's across the room playing and he wants to make some kind of a point, he can make it, you know, without us having any eye contact. In fact, we've always played better together, I think, than a lot of piano players who are able to nod and make hand gestures and everything else, you know.
Hmm.
No, that has never been any kind of problem in any respect.
Very good.
As a matter of fact, George is a fantastic musician. He's learned so much music from Braille. He's really superior in his musical knowledge to me by far.
George is
terrible. You think of a guy that a blind guy that's learning so much music and doing it the hard way by Braille and piece by piece, bar by bar.
Right.
George is an incredible musician.
Wow. So I gathered. Like I said, I listened to the work of the two of you. It was fascinating to listen to. What was the second one? Yeah, you did a second one, I believe. It's only the one?
Only the one.
I'm sorry. Again, the information.
No. I don't know, but that's sort of something we wanted to do, but I don't know if we'll do another. If we did, it might be some different kind of music, maybe some Baroque music or classical music or something different.
Hmm.
I don't know, but he's into this thing with Mel now. George is really, like, on a crest with the things he's doing with Mel. I mean, that just turned out to be a lucky pairing, and they're working a lot of dates together, and they're very compatible. It's wonderful.
Hmm. Very good. Well, I appreciate you taking all your time out to talk to me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And I've enjoyed it. I really did.
Well, thank you. I hope I'll meet you at the concert.
Same here. It was quite a nice surprise when I got back from listening to the records with my friends, and to come back and get your message and go, wow, this is nice.
What records do you listen to? Besides the ones with George and me?
Well, we listened to Alone Together. Most of the rest was George and Teddy Wilson records.
Uh-huh.
I'm slightly embarrassed to say.
Well, it's all right.
Because my friend didn't have any.
I've got a bunch of stuff out on Concord, but I don't know what they did with them. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to the date for Lost Friends in Clearwater.
Oh, very good.
And actually, we're going to play close by there at Christmas, Lake Buena Vista, you know.
Oh, near Disney.
Jimmy and I are going to open there December 13th.
I'm going to ask you a silly question, but it's not so silly. You keep referring to Jimmy, and I honestly don't know who Jimmy is.
He's the guy that's responsible for getting me over here, Jimmy McFarland.
I had a feeling. I had a rough feeling that was your husband, and I just wasn't positive.
Talk about different styles of jazz. I mean, he has always stayed with the traditional kind of music, but you know, and he says, well, that's my style, you know, he plays it well. But it's fun to play together once in a while, and that's one date we do just about every year. with their rhythm section. They have a new rhythm section now. They have George Morrow, who's a very good bass player. They have Don Carletta.
Your husband plays
trumpet.
Trumpet. Ah, very good.
Yeah. Well, he really responsible for getting me started. You know, first I worked with him, and then he helped me put the first trio together. And I've really had an ongoing group since about 1950. So
I see.
I can't say I've ever laid off for more than a month or two at a time.
It really is, especially over that period of time.
But I guess certain people thrive on work, and I'm one of them.
Mm. Very good. Well, as I say, I greatly appreciate your time. I've really enjoyed talking with you. I'm going to be in and out all day tomorrow. I'm going to call the radio station and find out what time the program airs, and if I can't catch it in the house, if I'm in the car, I'll try and listen to it there.
I hope you can, because you hear how good Dudley is. It came off very well.
And then
when your piece comes out, I would love to see it.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure.
Well, could you send me one?
Certainly.
A tear sheet with the name and paper and all that?
Sure, you just tell me where to send it.
Box 256.
I thought Merrick was in Long Island. Well, I guess I will see you in about 2 weeks.
Okay, Bob. Thanks so much for
all right.
Taking all the time.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Believe me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.